From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Guess what day it is? Yes, it is Hump Day. Happy Hump Day, ladies and gents. Welcome to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this rainy, rainy Wednesday. Hope everybody is sound and safe right now. Man, oh man, did it come down last night. I mean, it actually woke me up at around 4 o'clock in the morning. Thunderstorming, lightning everywhere. Hopefully everyone is safe. I know Matt actually lost power. If you are like Matt, I hope that you guys get your power on soon. Man, it was crazy last night. Raining cats and dogs. But we have a great show to rain down on you today as we will kind of go back into our current sports time machine and really talk about the issue of referee abuse. Now, it's something that we covered not too long ago here on Current Sports. We actually had a week-long segment on it. And in preparation for my sit-down tonight on WKAR-TV with MHSAA referee Dan Jimenez, I will be talking with Mark Yule, an interview I did quite some time ago, and Mark is the director, the assistant director for the MHSAA, and he knows a lot about officiating. So you'll get to hear that chat, and we'll also dive into that subject today. We'll also talk about the Pelicans. Yes, the New Orleans Pelicans seem to be interested in a certain Piston. U of M and MSU, they get some national attention for their quarterbacks, and Barbershop Wednesday will be coming right at you as we discuss the future of LeBron James. Now, before we get to all of that, as custom here on Current Sports, here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners.
Good afternoon. I'm Alex Sharg, and these are your Current Sports quick hit headliners for this Wednesday, June 18th. Say bye-bye to first-place Tiger fans. The Tigers were beaten by the Royals last night, 11-4, the final. Max Scherzer allowed a career-high tying 10 runs and 4-plus innings. The reigning American League Cy Young Award winner allowed the first eight batters of the second inning to reach base, with Kansas City scoring 6 runs before making it out. In the 9-19 downturn, Justin Verlander and Scherzer are each 1-for-6 in quality starts. It's the first time this season the Tigers have been out of first place, and they will regain it if they beat the Royals this afternoon. According to a story by NOLA.com, the New Orleans Pelicans might be one of the suitors for a sign-and-trade deal with the Detroit Pistons for Greg Monroe. The 6'11 power forward has averaged 14 points and 9 rebounds in the last 4 seasons with the Pistons, and the Pistons could retain the veteran forward by matching any offer made to Monroe, who will hit the free agent market on July 1st. The Detroit Pistons president, Steve Jabara, announced this morning that the Pistons D-League affiliate will be known as the Grand Rapids Drive. The nickname was one of 4 choices that fans had been able to vote on since the franchise relocated from Springfield, Massachusetts in April. The nickname pays homage to the economic history of Grand Rapids and connects it to the Pistons' automotive theme. The team's logo, which was also unveiled this morning, mirrors the Pistons' red, white, and blue color scheme and is reminiscent of its Bad Boys era logo. Cool. The Drive will take court for its inaugural season in November, playing games at the 5,000-seat Deltaplex Arena. Fans can purchase tickets at nbagrandrapids.com. NFL.com's Brian Fisher has hit the books to rank the top programs over the last 25 years at producing NFL-quality quarterbacks, and both Michigan and MSU cracked the top 10. Mostly on the strength of Tom Brady, U of M is ranked second behind the one and only USC. Brady, Chad Henne, Brian Griese, Elvis Gerback, and Drew Henson did most of the heavy lifting for the Wolverines. For MSU, quarterbacks like Kirk Cousins, Jim Miller, Tony Banks, Jeff Smoker, Drew Stanton, and oddly not Brian Hoyer were enough to put the Spartans at number 9. Another exciting day in the World Cup saw 2 draws and a comeback win. Algeria took a 1-0 lead and looked to shock Belgium before the Red Devils scored 2 goals in 10 minutes to hold on 2-1. Russia and South Korea played a 1-1 draw, and in the most talked about match of the day, Brazil could not beat Mexico keeper Guillermo Ochoa, and despite dominating the match, the hosts ended in a 0-0 draw. In American World Cup news, striker Jozy Altidore has been ruled out of Sunday's game versus Portugal, but coach Jurgen Klinsmann is optimistic he'll be able to return before the end of the tournament. On the bright side, Klinsmann stated that Matt Bessler and Clint Dempsey would be ready to go Sunday. Both suffered injuries in the opener versus Ghana. Tiger Woods is reportedly making progress from an injury that has kept him out most of the year. He is now chipping and putting as he continues to come back from back surgery, according to reports. Woods had back surgery on March 31st and has not spoken publicly since May 19th, when he said doctors had not cleared him to go beyond chipping and putting. He missed the Masters in April, as well as the recent U.S. Open. After a five-game exit from the 2014 NBA Finals, LeBron James said that he will not make a decision on playing next year until after he vacations with family. LeBron also told the Miami Herald, quote, "For me, I just want to win, and that's all that matters to me." And finally, the axe murderer has now admitted to taking a banned substance, according to attorney Ross Goodman. Silva eluded a drug test on May 24th because of the use of a diuretic used to cure wrist injuries that is supposedly banned. Silva has been fighting for over 20 years with more than 50 professional fights. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. The lines are now open, 517-355-9527. Time to send it back to Al to start the show.
All right. Thanks a lot, Alex. Boy, I tell you, who doesn't use banned substances anymore? I feel like everybody and their mama is doing it nowadays. It's crazy. Come on, Silva. Really, dude? All right. As you heard, the phone lines are open. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Thank you for bringing those current sports quick hit headliners. You know, if you don't happen to be by a phone, you know, you can go online at facebook.com/currentsports and also leave us a comment there about anything that's on your noggin, and also tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. And how about the Tigers? Say bye-bye again, as Alex eloquently put it. Say bye-bye to first-place Tigers fans. It is looking ugly right about now. Wow. I tell you what, I went on the show yesterday and said that my panic meter is at a 9 now. I'm ready to move it up. I'm going to move it up now, Alex. It's a 9.1. It's 9.1 now. Still, it's creeping towards that 10. Because, my good, I don't know. With the way the Kansas City Royals are playing right now, with the way they are playing, I mean, what is that? 9 straight now for them. If they continue to play like this throughout the season and are consistent, my goodness, I don't see the Tigers winning the AL Central. You got to be a little worried now. And they've done it. The way they've done it against the Tigers, I mean, you beat two of the best pitchers in the game in Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer. And Max Scherzer has the worst game of his career. Allowed a career high tying 10 runs in 4-plus innings. That it just did not look good for the Tigers yesterday. The Royals are certainly roaring right now. And this is the first time that this late in the season that this team has led the AL Central, well, the division, has led the division in over a decade. That's unbelievable. Kansas City, they have a young, talented team, and I don't even think they hit their peak yet. I mean, it's still a long season, as we all know in baseball. But the Tigers, you just see that. I mean, this losing streak. I mean, a 9-19 downturn. Oh boy, if you're a Tigers fan, you can't feel pretty good right now. It's still early, I know, but my goodness, looking at how the Royals are playing right now, it's tough. It's tough not to feel any type of discouragement at all. So again, folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527. Also remind you all that, hey, it is Wednesday. You know, each and every Wednesday here at the WKAR-TV studios, we invite all of you, yes, you, to come on out and join me for the live studio taping of Current Sports TV. And tonight, it's a pretty cool episode, folks. A pretty cool guy I'll be sitting down with. His name is Dan Jimenez. Yes, Dan has been a referee for a long, long time in this area and has done an outstanding job. Dan is, you know, a good friend of the show. And we know, you know, when I went back in time and, you know, because we're going to go back in time really quick and kind of highlight a certain interview I did with the assistant director of the MHSAA. His name is Mark Yule. And Mark and Dan and, you know, a few others joined me on the show for an entire week to talk about the issue of referee abuse. Now, if you don't know, this really came up and sparked a lot of discussion due to the fact that there was in Utah, there was an incident that occurred with a soccer official refereeing a soccer match, and a situation occurred where the fans certainly didn't agree with the call that was made on the field. One fan was so angered by the call that he decided to come out on the field and pick a fight with one of the officials. He ended up punching the official right dead in the face, right in the nose. That official went into a coma and sadly, eventually, passed away. It sparked shockwaves through the sports world. I mean, you couldn't turn on CNN or ESPN or any media outlet without hearing about it. You could hear accounts from the man who passed away, his family, such as his daughter and his wife and his other kids. It was really sad and really sparked up a lot of discussion on referee abuse. And I remember watching Real Sports with Brian Gumbel the following week or two, and they had a whole special and a whole segment on it, interviewing referees that had been involved in situations where they got into physical altercations with fans. Fans actually came onto the field, and there were fights, and they were beat. It was crazy. Craziness. A situation where sports just go too far sometimes. And frankly, a lot of us take it too serious sometimes. So we're going to highlight that tonight because Dan has some strong opinions about what referees go through, the heckling from the stands. And we all know, I mean, that's a part of the sport. Referees are going to get heckled. That's going to happen until the end of time. But folks, there is a fine line. So I'll be chatting with Dan about that line and when exactly that line is crossed. What's the protocol that referees go through to try and combat that? Again, that's tonight at the WKAR-TV studios at 6 p.m. Dan Jimenez, can't wait to sit down with him and dive into that. And as a preview of that, I'm actually going to go back in time to that week where we highlighted referee abuse. Again, this is an interview with Mark Yule, who is the assistant director for the Michigan High School Athletic Association. He dropped by in the studio to discuss his personal views as a referee and what role the MHSAA plays in refereeing. We welcome Mark Yule, the assistant director for the Michigan High School Athletic Association. He began his work there back in January of 2004. He has an extensive officiating career prior to his hiring as assistant director for the MHSAA. He had been registered in at least three sports since 1992, worked the baseball finals back in 1999, also served as a collegiate baseball umpire at all levels since 1996, has experience at the minor league level, and also a Big Ten baseball umpire for about 15 years. Mark, you've done it all, man. Welcome to Current Sports.
Good to be with you, Al. Thanks.
Thank you, man. So how did you personally get started in the world of refereeing?
Well, I actually grew up in an officiating household. My dad has been a high school referee for 45 years. It was a case of he ran the local Little League where we grew up. And as he was running the Little League and I was playing at the 12-year-old level, I would go back and umpire the 10-year-olds and kept moving right on up. My younger brother was in professional baseball for 11 years as an umpire, got all the way up to the AAA level. So with us, it was just kind of in our blood and grew up with it. And officiating has been a really big part of my life.
So you kind of been destined for this already then?
If you want to use the word destined, I guess. But yeah, officiating is really, it's the one and only hobby that I have and absolutely love it.
So Mark, for you, yesterday, like I said just a minute ago, we talked with Carlos Foligno, who you know. He stated that he really went in depth into the abuse that referees endure sometimes when they're out in the field of play. Now, I don't know if you heard about this story, the ref out in Utah who was actually, he drew a yellow card, 17-year-old punches him in the face, he goes into a coma and passes away. And Carlos kind of had an experience kind of similar to that. Thank God it wasn't fatal, but he was even punched in the face. I mean, this is really getting out of hand over the years. Have you ever been involved in a hostile physical situation while officiating?
Really haven't. My recent experience is umpiring baseball at the Division I level. So you go to a Big Ten school or some of the NCAA tournament things, we have security with us at all times. So it's never been an issue at the collegiate level. And that's the same for, you know, Big Ten basketball or football and really across the board. Now, with my day job with the MHSAA, even at the school sports level, really security is good. We have athletic directors, we have site supervisors, game managers, and to be honest, in the world of school sports, there is accountability for coaches and players. It's a case if a coach gets out of line and gets ejected, or the same thing with a player, there's really a structure in place where they can deal with that bad behavior, to where if a coach gets ejected multiple times during the year, they're out of our MHSAA tournament at the end of the season. Same way if a player or coach would ever physically contact an official, and then that leads to an ejection, then they are ineligible to play in our tournament. So in the school setting, we really have a framework that's built to really model good sportsmanship. Now, where you hear the horror stories are the non-school programs, where there is no athletic director, there is no principal, there is no governing body, so to speak, when things go sideways and get out of hand, to where, you know, I have young kids right now, and some of the worst things that I see from a sportsmanship aspect are going to my kids' youth hockey games or a youth football rocket game on a Saturday, where, again, coaches, players, and even their parents and spectators, there's really no accountability. So we often talk in the office, is there a way that we could reach out and work with some of these youth programs to really give them some guidance? Because from a high school perspective, all these youth sport parents and coaches that maybe teeter on the brink of being out of control will eventually become our high school parents, and we want to get them off on the right foot in terms of what is going to be accepted and what isn't, which will only make the job easier for our member school ADs once those folks keep moving up the ladder.
Now, you talk about that accountability. What are some things that are that you're seeing that's kind of alerting you guys to this and saying, whoa, we got to change this?
Yeah, we've really tried to be ahead of the curve with some of our penalties, where with coaches or players, ejections, every ejection gets turned into our office. And the coach that gets ejected twice during a season, they're out of our tournament. So if the varsity football coach gets ejected two times during the regular season, he can't coach during the MHSAA playoffs if their team should qualify. Mm-hmm. Same thing with players. A third ejection on the part of a player, they're also ineligible for our tournament. And then any physical contact, same thing, out of our tournament. I can tell you that that has greatly improved the sportsmanship climate, as well as the fact that if you get ejected from a middle school or high school game, you're out for the rest of that day, plus your team's next day. So automatically we have a suspension mechanism built in. And again, you don't want to talk about suspensions being something positive, but I can tell you that our ejection and suspension rule serves as the best deterrent that we have, because at the end of the day, what do kids want to do? They want to play.
They want to play.
And when they get out of line and get ejected, they know that if they cross that line, that it's going to mean they're going to be sitting, and that's really the best carrot that we have out there.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Mark Yule, the assistant director over at the MHSAA here in Michigan, and also a Big Ten baseball umpire for 15 years and counting. Mark, how are officials trained to deal with hostile environments?
You know, the toughest thing is you have to have thick skin. And there are some people to where that's a real easy skill to pick up, to where with other folks that get involved in officiating, there's that natural reaction to try and respond or react to everything that's said.
Right.
The biggest thing that we teach is you have to tell the difference between something that's just said in anger or frustration versus something that's personal. For example, working a baseball game, if somebody says, "Oh, Mark, that's a terrible call." Well, we can agree to disagree on that, and we can even have a little conversation back and forth, but it was that call was terrible. Well, if it turns into, "Mark, you're terrible," or, "Mark, you're an awful umpire."
That's personal.
That's now personal, and that's something that we're going to deal with. If it's a sport where we can throw the flag or give a technical foul or give a yellow card, that needs to happen. If it's a sport where that just means an automatic ejection, that needs to happen. So it's the judging that line of what's personal and what's not. Certainly at our high school level, any kind of profanity should be an automatic penalty. That's something that we're just not going to tolerate in the school sports setting.
Right.
So it's really figuring out what is going to be acceptable, because in sports you're going to have to agree to disagree at times. But it's really building that foundation to where things that pass into the personal area, we have to penalize it. Because if you're refereeing one day and you allow a coach to get all after you on a personal level, and then I have to come in and officiate that team's next game, and now I do deal with it and penalize it, well, then it makes the job of all officials much harder. So if we can try and give that consistent message that here are things that are okay, here are things that aren't, I think it'll just make everybody's job so much easier.
So, Mark, you've been an official. I mean, you're still an official, for goodness sake. I mean, I'm sure you've dealt with rowdy coaches over the years. Give me an example of how you dealt with a coach.
You know, the biggest thing is coaches just want to be heard. You have to, and I know it's hard for us sometimes as officials, but to put yourself in the shoes of coaches. At the high school level right now, Al, coaching, in my opinion, has never been more challenging. You're dealing with very high, in some cases, unrealistic expectation of parents.
Right.
To where they think that that coach, it's the responsibility to get my kid to the next level, whatever that is. It's to get my kid that college scholarship. It's to get my kid noticed in media attention so they can maybe play on the best AAU team. Fill in the blank. There has never been more pressure on coaches today, especially given the fact that if a parent or the kid doesn't like their coach, they can now go to social media, to where now it becomes in chat rooms and it becomes in Twitter and it becomes with Facebook posts. So I think our officials have to understand that the job of coaching at the high school level has never been more difficult. And certainly with more pressure on coaches, you'll see more emotional reactions during games. So what you need to do first is listen. You know, a coach is upset with something that I've called, the first thing I try and do is say nothing. And I just listen. Because a lot of times that coach, in kind of their little opening statement, so to speak, or their opening yell, may give me something where I can redirect the conversation to where it may be just them, Mark, my gosh, there is no way my guy was out. How could you make that call? Yeah. It's like, well, hey, I don't want to argue with you, coach, but you know what? I can tell you what I saw, and I can just give you that explanation. So if you want to have a conversation about the play, we can go ahead and do it. But frankly, if you're just going to yell and vent, I'm just going to stand here and listen, and you're going to need to go back and coach your team, and I need to stand here and keep umpiring. So I'm going to put the choice to you. A lot of times, if you can then give the coach kind of that choice of, okay, well, all right, what did you see? And we can then discuss the play in a civil manner. It's never going to change anything, but hopefully I can get him to go back and move on to his next thing that he's worried about, and the game can continue. So that really is the strategy and some of the techniques we try and arm our officials with as we train them to head out there.
So when it boils down to it, when you're dealing with a coach or a player, anything for that matter, either one of those, it all depends on their attitude and how they approach the situation involved with the referees, that interaction.
There are many times where an explanation is warranted and deserved. And typically it's not really from players, because it's really not their place in many cases, unless they're a team captain, say in hockey or in basketball or in football, where they actually have a role to interact with the officials. 95% of our exchanges are with coaches, and we try and encourage our officials, when explanations are warranted, explain to the coach what you saw. Explain to the coach why you called. Let's try and get out of the argument business, and let's try and get more into the conversation business. And if you can keep it at a conversational level, things typically don't escalate, and you can keep them in the game, and hopefully we can keep the contest moving with no issues.
We're talking with Mark Ewell here on Current Sports Today. He is the assistant director over at the Michigan High School Athletic Association. He's been refereeing for countless years. He's actually a Big Ten baseball umpire for 15 years and counting. So, Mark, how do you feel as though referees are protected enough when you talk about this whole abuse conversation?
It's in many states, state legislatures have actually passed laws that deal specifically with abuse toward game officials.
Okay.
In some states, they feel that that's a necessary measure to almost make sports officials a protected class, so to speak, to where, again, that fear of punishment may actually make officials safer. You take the total number of games that are played out there in all sports, the number of incidents that you hear about where there is a confrontation or physical contact. And a lot of times it's not coaches or participants. In many cases, it's the officials are leaving the venue, and it's often a spectator, many times a parent who they can't control their own emotional state of being. And that's where some of the issues really come from. But you look at it in the total gross numbers, I mean, that happens very few and far between. But it's a case of, you know, those that run and administer these leagues have to spell out the expectations that everybody has to be working from before those seasons begin. Because I've found even the non-school programs, the leagues that are well-run and spell out that, hey, we are not going to tolerate you attacking or verbally or physically officials, we're just not going to put up with that around here, and those leagues tend to go pretty well. The ones that don't spell out expectations ahead of times, that's where the problems come about.
Now, Mark, you've played baseball over at Calvin College in Grand Rapids. Even an assistant football coach over at Thorn Apple Kellogg Schools in Middleville. When it came to your interaction with refs, I'm sure it got heated at times. That's just the nature of sports. But did you become sympathetic at all toward refs after becoming one and seeing what they go through.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, having officiated even, you know, during my teenage years working Little League Baseball gave me a far different perspective than maybe what most high school athletes or even college athletes had, to where you realize that officials are important. You realize that without officials, we can't play these games. And the biggest thing, and everybody says, we need more officials and we need better officials. Well, the way to get more officials and better officials is to try and create an environment where these folks have a good time.
Right.
They can learn and improve without every single call being treated like it's the seventh game of the World Series or right now the seventh game of the NBA Finals. I think you have to realize that in any game, any football game, a basketball game, a soccer match, the game is not going to be played perfectly by the players. The game is not going to be coached perfectly by the coaches. And so for us to have this expectation of imperfect coaches, imperfect players, but yet somehow the officials have to be perfect from their very first day on the job and then only improve on that, I think is unrealistic. So it's the folks that can step back and realize that sports are an imperfect activity by imperfect people, and it's all just part of the game. And the other thing, Al, you know, with instant replay that we keep hearing is, oh, we need to expand instant replay. Well, at the high school and middle school level, we're really opposed to instant replay because part of learning and part of the experiences of playing on a school sports team is you realize that life isn't perfect. And a lot of times you can learn things when you lose and you can also learn things when you win. And you realize that sometimes life isn't fair and there's valuable lessons in being able to pick up the pieces and be able to move on to the next thing. Well, what instant replay does, it really puts the pause button on everything and says, that's okay. And here in life, everything is going to be perfect because as long as we have video, we can fix it.
Right.
So it's not even so much of a playing rule or a technology piece. The reason that we don't want replay at the high school level is I think it sets up our kids for failure that life isn't going to be perfect, that every call is not going to be perfect. And a very important life skill is realizing that, hey, when you get a bad call, how are you going to deal with it? How are you going to respond? How are you going to move on? And that's life. And that, I think, is one of the most valuable lessons that hopefully our young people have on a middle school or a high school team.
Mark, that is a very, very good point when you talk about – just speaking from the high school perspective, I mean – because, I mean, that's a great teacher of life. And I believe sports, it's one of the biggest reasons why I got into sports, because it's such a big lesson of life when you look at the values and the things you learn throughout playing sports, you know?
Because instant replay makes sense at the pro level.
Yeah,
millions of dollars are riding on things to where a missed call, home run or not, or in football, you know, down or fumble, or even in basketball now they can go to replay without a bounds calls.
Right.
The money that's at stake there, that's understandable.
So you agree replay should be in baseball. That's our discussion today, too. Later on, we're going to be debating this. So do you agree that replay should be in baseball?
I think replay should be expanded. And the reason why is if you would ask the 68 full-time major league umpires, they want to be able to walk out of the ballpark every single night knowing that they're not going to be the story. You take the Jim Joyce play in Detroit.
Oh, yeah.
He became a national first of all, a national villain, and then became almost a national folk hero the following day. You take that same scenario and put that in an NFL game. That call would have been made. They would have stopped the game. A minute later, somebody would have announced in some way or fashion that the call has been overturned and reversed. They would have gone on and celebrated that perfect game, and no one would have even remembered who the official was involved.
Right.
And I think you ask the big league umpires, they don't want to become the story. And if it means that they can use technology and it's done quickly and it's a way that they can get the play right, and they then – that just takes off an awful lot of pressure that guys right now in the baseball world feel.
Definitely. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Mark Ewell, the assistant director over at the Michigan High School Athletic Association. He's been a long-time official, actually a Big Ten baseball umpire for 15 years and counting. So, Mark, for those who are not familiar with the MHSAA, what is your position entail, the assistant director of MHSAA? What do you handle?
The biggest piece of my day is coordinating and working with our 12,000 registered officials. That's our referees, our umpires, our judges in some sports. If someone is interested, for example, in getting into officiating, come to our website, mhsaa.com. The first step is you then become registered with the MHSAA. You sign up, you tell us what sports you'd like to become an official. We then get you rule books, training manuals. An official that's registered with us actually, Al, has insurance coverage. If you're refereeing for us under the MHSAA Association, if you get sued during a game that you're working, maybe an athlete becomes injured and the parents feel that the referees allowed the game to get out of control, we actually have coverage, liability coverage for that official while working. Same way if an official gets injured seriously during one of our contests, we have some medical coverage for that. So a lot of benefits in becoming an MHSAA registered official. And then once we get you registered, we then get you connected with a local group for local training, opens the doors up to game assignments, and then hopefully we can get you involved for a long and prosperous officiating career. And to you ask, by and large, our 12,000 officials, and they tell you that officiating is a big part of their life. Even though that their playing days are far in the rearview mirror of life, it still gives them that game each week to look forward to. It allows them to continue to work with young people. It allows them to maybe fulfill part of that competitiveness that we all still have. And officiating is really a neat way to do it. Plus, you're going out to pursue your hobby. Tell me what other hobbies can you go out, participate in, and actually then come home with more money than what you started with. That's why my wife has been so supportive of my one and only hobby is baseball. If my hobby was golf or hunting, I would be gone on weekends spending money.
Right.
When I come home Sunday night after a Big Ten series, I actually come home with money. So it's a really neat way to chase your passions and yet also make a little money as well.
Definitely. Mark Yule, the assistant director over at the MHSAA and also a Big Ten baseball umpire for 15 years. He's done countless games. So, Mark, I got to ask you also, man, before we wrap things up, what improvements, when you first got this job as with the MHSAA, what did you want to do? What were your goals, and what improvements can the MHSAA make to become better?
I think the biggest thing is we need to be the biggest supporters of officials anywhere in our state. When things go sideways during a game, the two teams typically are going to first have the backs of their coaches and their players. Same way with spectators. And a lot of times the one person that could get hanging out there a little bit out to dry are the officials. So the thing that we have tried to do is we have been supportive of our officials. Our officials know when they work, yes, they're not going to be perfect, but at the end of the day, we are going to support them as long as they're following the rules, using common sense, and doing the right thing. So that's been the biggest thing, because if we're going to attract more people into officiating, they have to know that they're going to be supported by the MHSAA. The other piece that we've tried to do is really use technology to where a lot of our training, we're trying to use more and more video whenever we can, because the best teacher obviously is using real live game footage, and we've been able to incorporate that in a lot of our training across the board, whether it be a soccer referee, a basketball official, a football back judge, or a wrestling referee.
So will we see that at the high school level?
Yeah, we take game footage and then we put that together in a package to where if I'm a football referee, we're able to show them 20 clips on holding. Here are examples of fouls that are fouls, and then here are some examples of we need to pass on that. And that's not holding in this case. So we're really trying to make it by topic to where an official really can get brought up to speed quite quickly with some of the video that we're putting together and using that as a good teaching tool.
But we won't see instant replay at the high school. That's not what it's moving towards right now.
It is not. No, it's used only in basketball and ice hockey. Those are the two sports. And in basketball at the Breslin only, it's only our semis and finals where we can use that for just a last-second shot or a foot on the two-point line, yes or no. And then in ice hockey, we'd use that at our finals simply if a puck has crossed the line or not.
All right, well, that is our throwback chat. That was a sit-down that I had with Mark Yule, again, the assistant director for the MHSAA, talking about the subject of referee abuse and so much more. And that's kind of a preview, a segue, if you will, to my sit-down tonight with Dan Jimenez. Yes, Dan is a longtime official in the MHSAA and has some pretty strong thoughts on the issue of referee abuse. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience, you can do so by signing up online for free at WKAR.org. Again, that's tonight at 6 p.m. Look forward to seeing all of your beautiful faces. All right, when we come back, we'll kind of wrap up our thoughts on referee abuse, talk about the Pelicans, who are interested in Greg Monroe, and how about U of M and MSU getting some national attention when it comes to the QB position? We'll explain. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports returns in just a sec.
right, it is World Wednesday here on Current Sports as well. That's why where we play music from different cultures and continents. Gotta love that. Thanks a lot, Alice, for bringing that to us. And also on today's Wednesday, we have Barbershop Wednesday right around the corner. And today we are going to chat about the future of LeBron James. What should he do? Should he leave Miami or should he stay? We'll talk about that later on. But first, let's wrap up our thoughts on referee abuse. Again, I'll be sitting down with Dan Jimenez tonight at 6 p.m. for WKAR-TV. And you just saw a throwback chat with Mark Ewell, who is the assistant director for the MHSAA and also official. And, you know, going back and listening to that interview now, man, I mean, you know, it puts a lot of things in perspective. Again, we brought that interview to the table and brought that entire week to the table because of an incident that occurred in Utah in which a 17-year-old soccer player in Utah, he actually pled guilty in that whole incident, but he actually punched a referee in the face. His name was Ricardo Portillo. And he ended up going into a coma and eventually passing away. And it was a story that really sent shockwaves across the nation and kind of put in perspective this whole issue of referee abuse, because up until that incident, honestly, Matt, it's something that was rarely talked about. And now you're starting to see this conversation pop up in various mediums.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to yell something at the refs from the stands. And even that is a little overboard these days, I feel like, especially in youth sports and at the non-professional level. I think people take it too far.
Right.
But when you start to cross the line and get into physical altercations with referees, I mean, there's no place for that anywhere, at any level. I mean, it's right. Just ridiculous. I don't know how people could be driven to that level of you know, anger, I guess, but apparently they are. Obviously, a punch to the head. I don't think someone was trying to kill someone.
Right.
You know, I think obviously things got a little heavier than maybe the punch thrower anticipated. But still, to resort to physical violence over sports, and especially with the refs, there's just no place for it.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, we've seen it multiple occasions. That incident happened to be a 17-year-old soccer player. That was one of the players who got into it with the referees. And we say it all the time. You know, I was just on Twitter a minute ago, and you know, and I'm seeing people tweet about the World Cup and talking about how the referees are getting into it with those of the World Cup. I mean, it's inevitable, especially, you know, when you, other than the players, when you talk about the fans at games, it's kind of amplified, too, when it comes to pro sports as well, because let's be honest, this is something that's never going to stop. I mean, we're always going to be, I've done it before, yelling at my TV or yelling at a game if I didn't agree with a call or didn't agree with something that was being ruled out on the court. Yeah, I've definitely yelled a few times, you know, out there. It's not going to stop. But as you said, there's a fine line between being upset, voicing your opinion, and then crossing into the realm where it involves a physical altercation. So there's certainly a fine line with it. And, you know, I've actually even seen talks, you know, reading up on this subject in preparation for my sit down with Dan tonight. You know, looking at, you know, how some organizations in certain states are possibly even thinking about equipping referees with either pepper spray, with possibly guns. And discussion's even gone that far. And possibly even, you know, like, you know, tasers. And I gotta be honest with you, you know, being, you know, growing up in Detroit and going to a few, you know, going to many basketball games, especially high school basketball games like a Cody, not to call any high schools out, but Cody, MLK, you know, certain ones, I mean, Highland Park, some of those games sometimes get very rowdy. I remember being, you know, at one in high school where a fight broke out. It was kind of like a mini brawl, if you will. The police were there. They had to break it up. It gets crazy. And, you know, I've definitely seen players get into it with the refs to the point where there has been a physical altercation. And so I definitely see where that conversation is going, and I wouldn't be mad at them. Maybe not as far as equipping them with a gun, a loaded gun, but pepper spray or something like that. Because honestly, Matt, some of these areas are tough. Some of these people are crazy out here, especially in today's world. So I could see it.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree. I think guns is a little too
far.
I
don't know about that one.
Refs packing heat. I don't know if I could see that. But something in self-defense.
Right, exactly.
Sure. I mean, why not?
Think Pavetta packing heat on the court, huh?
Yeah, I just can't see it. I can't see it. No. But pepper spray, I guess I could see that. I mean, anything to kind of help defend yourself because, you know, like Mark alluded to, we just expect so much from refs.
Yeah.
Even at the non-professional level, you expect a ref to be perfect and to tread the fine line where they, you know, keep peace in the game but have no effect on the outcome. Mm-hmm. And that is such a tough, balance to achieve, and to expect refs to keep that balance in every instance at every game, it's just not realistic. So I think people need to take a step back. And I know the emotional investment in sports is obviously there. People love sports. People get riled up about sports. People get angry about sports.
Right.
But to act on that anger, you just shouldn't do it.
And I understand
there's
at the youth level.
To it.
There's no point. At the youth level, too, I mean, I feel as though parents get way too involved. We talked about that here on the show, how parents get way too involved in the situation. I understand that maybe a little baby girl out there, your son out there. But, hey, again, you got to take a step back and realize the situation that, hey, it's not that serious. And we take sports way too serious. There is value. I think we're losing sometimes the key teaching moments in sports as well, especially specifically at the youth level, because there is value in losing. I know we all hate to lose. Everybody hates to lose. I'm probably one of the most competitive guys you ever meet. But losing, especially when you're young, teaches you certain things. First of all, you learn how to lose. First of all, you learn how to be classy about it. You shake your opponent's hand, and it kind of fuels you to get better. Because let's be honest, if you're spoiled and winning everything, where's the drive at? And we're losing that message as well, Matt.
We are, and I think it's also important to lose by a tough call.
Right.
Because that's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
I mean, that's going to happen no matter what you do. People are going to get things wrong. Like, it's just a part of life. It's human nature. Mistakes happen. And to just jump on a ref, like, if you're a little league player and you see your dad or mom or somebody getting into it with a ref because he missed a call or something—
Right.
That is a terrible lesson to teach your kids. Like,
terrible.
You have to realize where you are. This isn't the World Series.
Right.
This is a Little League game on a Thursday night or something.
Yeah.
Just take a step back, take a few deep breaths.
Chill out.
And just let it go.
Yeah, it's so
part
true.
Of sports. It's a good lesson to learn, like you said. It's just too much to get, it's not enough, rather, to get worked up over to that degree.
Exactly. I can't wait to sit down with Dan to talk about how he deals with those certain situations, because they've definitely happened to him as well. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. If you're going to want to give your thoughts on anything we talk about here on Current Sports and also Current Sports TV, again tonight with Dan Jimenez, who is a referee official, a longtime official, and also former basketball coach from the area. He'll be sitting down with me to talk about the issue of referee abuse. Well, let's shift gears really quick. The New Orleans Pelicans. How about this? Now, according to a story by NOLA.com, the New Orleans Pelicans might be interested in a sign-and-trade deal with the Pistons for big man Greg Monroe, 6'11" power forward who has averaged 14 points, 9 rebounds in 4 seasons with the Pistons. Now, this is interesting because, Matt, we had Vince Ellis, who's a beat writer for the Detroit Pistons. We had him on the show last week. And Vince kind of dove into and said, hey, he doesn't think that Greg Monroe is going anywhere. And it's funny because, I've been reading all these rumors, trade rumors and whatnot. When I brought it up to him, he said, well, I haven't written it. You haven't been reading me, obviously, because I don't think it's going to happen. And, you had Stan Van Gundy come out not too long ago and say that he wants Monroe to come back with this team and he could see him as a great fit here and he can work with the big three. Somehow, some way, he's going to work with them. But now that this, this has come out and New Orleans is kind of, their interest has peaked. I'm sure there's many other teams out there who wouldn't mind having Greg Monroe on their roster. He is a solid, solid player. So now I'm not so 100% sure that Monroe will be a Piston next year. At the end of the day, for me, I tell you what, the Josh Smith contract is truly unfortunate because I think that's the whole mud in the water. It's really creating a foggy perception of this whole thing. If Smith isn't getting overpaid here, Monroe is back with the Pistons. I think there's no doubt about it. And I think this conversation shifts to possibly what will they do with Josh Smith. But with that contract set in place and the crazy amount of money they're paying Josh Smith, it sort of adds, just an added craziness to this whole discussion. Now, at the end of the day, I just want to see Monroe. At the end of the day, I want to see the guy happy because I think that he's a great player. I think he could find a niche somewhere, possibly with the Pistons. Because I think Stan Van was very adamant on saying that, hey, Monroe, we want you back. I think he's a great fit here. I can work with this guy. I think Stan can pull off some magic here. But the question now is, will he even get the opportunity to do that?
Right. Now, Al, if you are Stan Van Gundy, mm-hmm. and let's say you've already decided You want to trade Greg Monroe. Who do you want in return from the Pelicans?
Yeah, you know, and this is a name.
Look at the roster.
Yeah.
I don't know. If they get Tyreke Evans, I will cry myself to sleep for a week.
Well, this is
I
a name.
I don't want Tyreke Evans.
No, but you know, this is a name that was thrown out, you know, reading a few reports here and there. Ryan Anderson's
name. That's the big one.
I like Ryan Anderson. I tell you what, Ryan Anderson right now is a career 38% three-point shooter. They need a shooter. We know that. I mean, we had Mateen last week, and that's what he's really harping on for the Pistons to have. And they need a shooter. Anderson's not bad from three-point line. He was making, what, 40% and averaging 19.8 points per game when he suffered that season-ending injury in January, at the beginning of January. So if they are going to get somebody, I think, hey, you got to go for Ryan Anderson. Because like you said, anybody else in that roster, hey, I don't want any really part of.
No.
Because it wouldn't be an added trade value. And if, you know, those out there listening think that Ryan Anderson doesn't live up to that billing for a trade for trade, then they may have to throw somebody else in that deal. Who? I don't know. But Ryan Anderson is a guy I think is if they're going to make that move, he has to put on a Pistons jersey.
He's got to be the guy. I mean, he's played for Van Gundy before.
Right.
He is. He is pretty much the quintessential stretch four.
Right.
I mean, he is a big man who can shoot the leather off the ball.
The guy in Orlando who opened things up for them.
He was the original stretch four, really.
Right.
I mean, he was the guy. And when you think about that pairing with him and Drummond, I mean, that's scary.
It sounds sexy, doesn't
it? He's that shooter that they need, and he kind of would open things up. Maybe then you say, well, Josh Smith, you'll play the three, but get your butt on the block because that's all you're going to be doing. You're right. Going to be playing in the paint. And then maybe you can kind of get the best out of Josh Smith instead of having him shoot ill-advised 25-footers for the entire year. Maybe you get somebody else to space the floor so he can go down and actually have some room to operate in the paint. So maybe it would work. Maybe that would improve the geometry of the team. I don't know. But if it comes down to Tyreke Evans, Eric Gordon, or Drew Holiday, no thank you.
No, I don't want anyone to know.
I will be taking my business elsewhere.
Exactly. I totally agree with you. So do you think at the end of the day, I could see a deal happening here, but I would not be surprised if Greg comes back. And that means the Pistons will have to come out and shell out some moolah for him. And I think they should, but if they, I don't know. It depends on how bad Stan wants him, because he's got the keys to the car right now.
He's
got to look at the money, though. You got a budget here. What do you think they're going to do, Matt?
I don't know. Ryan Anderson is really tempting.
He is very tempting.
Initially, when I read the report, I was like, oh, no. And then I remembered that they had him because, you know, he was
hurt
for so long.
Exactly.
You kind of forget about him.
Yep.
That's a tempting offer.
It is, very. You know, he's a guy who can shoot. He can take you down low sometimes. I mean, he's a very dynamic player. If they are going to make that move, they have to get Ryan Anderson, without a doubt.
They have to. But at the end of the day, to give up a 24-year-old center.
Yeah, I know, right? That's tough.
Yeah. Who's shown as much promise as Monroe has.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can give up on him right now, because that might come back to haunt them 5 years from now.
And I want to see if Stan can pull off some magic here, because I am such a non-believer that they can. And Vince kind of broke down if they are going to keep these three together, how they would do it. Josh would come off the bench and give you minutes where he's not hoisting up threes left and right. He would have to get his butt down on the block. His minutes will be cut significantly. I can see that working. I can see it. I'm curious to see if they can pull it off. As a Piston fan, do I want to risk that notion? I have no idea. We have a caller right now. Apache is on line one. How you doing, Apache? Welcome to the show.
All right, man. How you guys doing?
Great.
Yeah, as far as officiating concerned, NBA is totally crooked, man. Whether they intended or not, them cats are crooked. FIFA, it's got to be crooked. But as far as high school and junior high school and college, I think there's more level. But I think one of the abusers or the initiators of abuse from the fans comes from the coaches, man, because the coaches seem to designate the refs as enemy in their conduct. And you always hear about where the refs working or the coaches working on a call further on down the line, so forth and so forth.
Mm.
But anyway, on Jimenez, your guest, I guess is that going to be tonight?
Yes, tonight at 6 p.m.
Well, I used to officiate a few decades ago, and I got started out. I did some elementary games with him. The cat has got the most beautiful mechanics I've seen outside of the NBA, man. He really has good mechanics, good floor movement, and he treats it like an NBA game. Even the elementary games that I did with him, man, he was a very good teacher. So
yeah,
he is a very good ref. Coaching, that's another story. But I'm not one to judge. But I thought he was probably the best official I ever worked with, and I didn't work a lot with him. But I was very impressed. He did a lot of volunteer work, too, for Javier Cavazos.
Oh, nice. And,
I mean, he wasn't charging money. This cat was, I thought, one of the better ones in the area, officials, and yet he did a lot of free work for young kids. So he should be respected for that and appreciated. Hopefully you mentioned it to him. You know, he did a lot of volunteer work for Javier Cavazos, and Javier Cavazos is in the Hall of Fame.
Wow. So, yeah.
So he is a good guest to have on tonight, and I'm going to be watching.
Hey, thanks a lot, Apache. So, yeah, we're taping tonight. It will air, like, each and every Thursday at 10 p.m. So you'll get to see it on your TV tomorrow night at 10.
All right. So I'll check it out, man.
Hey, thank
seriously,
you.
Seriously, NBA's messed up. That FIFA's so obviously politically and economically influenced, man.
Yeah.
I think it's out of control. But, you know, even though the game is somewhat rigged, it seems to be, it's my personal opinion, it's just a beautiful game, man. You know, it's like a playoff hockey game. You're just scared from the moment the game starts.
There you have it.
And we saw it with the USA game. And, man, it's just incredible. You cannot take a break. You can't go get a Coke.
I'm telling you, man, it's nonstop action.
You cannot leave the television, man, because anything could happen. But anyway, it's still a beautiful game. I'm glad it's here, man. I'm glad the United States is winning, because then maybe FIFA will get the game of soccer will get a little bit more respect. But I think that's what's missing, is the United States is now winning.
Right.
They're starting to win, but, you know, in Central America and South America, they call that style of soccer, cha-cha soccer, because there's a lot of individual dancing with the ball, dribbling, and fancy footwork and so forth. And,
right.
And then in Europe, you got the one-touch long ball soccer. And I think Europe is starting to take on a little bit of that cha-cha and vice versa. I think cha-cha's taking on a little bit of long ball. So it's finding this medium and this balance, this equilibrium, and the game's becoming even more beautiful. Thanks a lot, guys.
Hey, thanks a lot.
I'll be watching on TV, man.
Hey, thanks a lot. All right.
Goodbye.
Thanks a lot, Apache. Oh, but gotta love that. Apache's always giving great insight, I tell you. I had no idea. The cha-cha? You ever heard of cha-cha style?
I've never heard of that.
Never. You learn something every day when Apache calls in. I gotta love that. Thanks a lot, Apache. If you want to call in just like he did, 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. You know what, Alex? We only have 7 minutes left. Let's skip the break. Let's go right to our Barbershop Wednesday topic really quick and dive into it. It's something everybody's been talking about. LeBron James. You know, I tell you what, the report came out today that after a 5-game exit from the finals, LeBron said that he would not make a decision on his playing future next year until he vacations with his family. So, yes, enjoy some time off. He certainly deserves it. He's the best player in the world. But everybody, he's leaving everybody, you know, kind of up in the air here on you know, kind of debating on what he will or should do next season. Now, let's quickly dive into this, guys. LeBron, first of all, when you think about this topic, I want to go back in time, and I hate bringing it up all the time, but I definitely want to talk about it really quickly, the decision. Because the decision was a move that, if when you talk about the LeBron haters, there's many LeBron haters out there, that was kind of the birth of the LeBron haters. Because everybody, you know, he had this huge fiasco where he's on national TV in front of everybody. It was an hour-long special on where would he take his talents. It was ridiculous. Then the concert when he gets to Miami and the not one, not two, not three, you know, discussion on, you know, championship rings. It really, including myself, really turned me off to the guy. And I said, this guy is just a kind of a pompous, you know, just crazy. I disliked LeBron, you know, during that time. Over time, you know, time heals all wounds. You know, he started to just kind of, he became more humble over time. He said that he came out and he regretted the whole thing and became the best player on the planet. What will this do for his legacy if he decides to up and jump ship yet again? Because I always think about that too. Because even back in the day, you know, with superstars who went through tough seasons, not to list any names, but there are multiple who had tough seasons, they still didn't bail on their franchise. Lord knows, there were years with the Spurs, even though they were such a consistent team, you didn't see Tim Duncan or Tony, you know, saying, okay, well, maybe I need to go somewhere else and try to win a ring here. If he does up and book, I think that this will add another chink in the armor for LeBron, where people can say, you didn't stick through it, and you just wanted to go somewhere else to win a championship. But you can also go into other argument and say that, hey, that's the nature of today's game. You got all these superstars leaving left and right to try to win a ring. That's how the game is now. It's not the 80s or the 70s and so on and so forth. If he does leave, Matt, I think you'll start to hear another rebirth of you know, LeBron haters say, okay, yeah, he's not willing to go through the pain and the heartache to go and earn a championship. You're going to hear it if he does leave.
Yeah, you'll definitely hear it. I do think that if he does leave, I can almost guarantee you it will not be in a one-hour special on ESPN.
Oh. I think you pretty much put money on that one, right?
He might just tweet it, and that'll be it. I mean, it's going to be such low fanfare this time around. I think he's definitely learned his lesson from the decision. As far as will he go or will he stay, I think he stays.
I think he does, too.
I think, you know, Chris Bosh has already said he'd be willing to take a pay cut. He's already said that publicly. I think LeBron, honestly, would probably be willing to take a pay cut. I think what you saw with the Spurs series, the Heat just weren't as good. You know, top to bottom, they were not as good a team, obviously. I mean, they got run off the floor. They need to reload. I mean, they got old quickly.
Oldest team in the league.
You know, they got real old. They've been to four straight finals. You could tell they just kind of ran out of gas. So I think the key for the Heat is, what can they put around LeBron to entice him to stay? And I think the big factor in that is Dwayne Wade.
Oh, yeah. He's the X factor in this.
Is he going to take a pay cut? Because if he does, then those rumblings about, well, maybe they'll get Melo. Or maybe they'll get a bunch of little pieces that they can put around the big three and come back even stronger than they did this year. The key is Wade. If Wade takes a step back, takes a few million less, and it opens up some of their cap room, I think there's no way, you know, no way possible he'll leave. LeBron, that is.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, like you said, Dwayne Wade is the key in all of this. He is the key. He is the straw that stirs the drink in this whole thing. I think you got to have a lot of faith in Pat Riley. Pat Riley has shown over time that, hey, he knows what he's doing. He knows that, hey, this team is probably a few pieces away of getting back to the finals. You play in the Eastern Conference, for goodness sake. If he's going to leave, what team is he going to go to? Possibly Houston, maybe Chicago. But still, you have a solid core right now with the Miami Heat. Why leave that? Now, I understand LeBron being 29 years old. He's smack dab in his prime right now. He doesn't want to waste years of not winning championships here. But this right now, I think, is still the ideal situation, especially if you're comparing it to the Eastern Conference right now. Where else are you going to go? I mean, you're Miami Heat. You coasted to the finals. Where else are you going to go if you go in the East? I think that, when you talk about those little pieces, I think Kyle Lowry is possibly one who, that's kind of, he's kind of like a, he reminds me of like a supercharged Mario Chalmers, if you will, but more under control, I think. Another name that's thrown out there, possibly they could upgrade their athleticism on the wing with a player like Trevor Ariza. Or possibly import some flexibility via Sean Marion. I mean, there's players out there they could go for, but players, again, have to sacrifice. I didn't know Bosh came out and said that. That's good that he said, hey, he's willing to sacrifice and take a pay cut. Will Wade do the same? I don't know. And Wade's clearly not the same player he was in the past. No. A lot of people forget, though, before this finals, he played decent throughout this year's playoffs. So there's shades there, but he's not the same.
He played decent, but he also sat out 30 games this year. You know, like, I don't think he has any leverage to say, no, I want to keep making $20 million a year. I think they've kind of got him over a barrel. He's got to take a pay cut, open up some flexibility for the Heat. And then LeBron stays, and they continue to compete for championships.
There you have it, folks. Go to Facebook.com and comment on what do you think LeBron's going to do this upcoming season. Thanks to all of you for tuning in to today's Current Sports. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Alan Martin, on WKRE East Lansing. As always, take care, have a fantastic day, and be easy, people.